Cracking. We've got lots to get through in the next hour. Good morning, Borodar Fab. My name is Auriel Miller. I'm the director of the IWA. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, could I also want a very, very warm welcome to you all. We are Wales's leading independent think tank. We've got a long track record of shaping debates and influencing change in Wales through our policy research and advocacy, our online and print publications. Here's the latest edition of the Welsh Agenda, just out this month. And that we provide platforms for robust comment and debate and our agenda setting events. We're a membership organisation with members right across the country and much further afield too. We're funded by our members, the events that we run ourselves, and independent trusts and foundations. And the large majority of our events are free, like today's. For those of you who aren't members, do please consider joining us, and somebody's going to put a link in the chat just now so that you too can help make our project happen and continue to deliver events such as this one that cross policy sectors and boundaries, and play your own part in making Wales better. A little bit of housekeeping before we get stuck in, please. As it's a webinar on Zoom, you are, as participants, muted by the host, I'm afraid, and we're going to use the Q&A section for questions. If you'd like to direct your question to a particular panelist, do please state their name. We really encourage you to engage with other people in the chat, and I can see that that's busy already, which is great. Please do note that all chat and questions are recorded. The hashtag for today's event is IWA Debate. Okay, so this is the 16th in our Rethinking Wales series, where we've aimed to provide an open, politically independent and inclusive space for discussion and debate to identify the challenges that we face in Wales because of COVID-19. And to work out where the opportunities for real change are. Our thanks are to the National Lottery Community Fund for sponsoring this particular event, Jochen Vaar. Today's event looks at community sport and inequality, and we're delighted to have partnered with the Welsh Sports Association. We'll be looking at how society's inequalities have affected access to sport and what needs to be done differently as we start to move out of the pandemic. Whilst elite sport has been able to continue fairly uninterrupted since the first wave, this event will examine the general public's access to sport and exercise and explore how inequalities have manifested themselves in all sorts of different ways and places. Joining us on today's panel are Victoria Ward, Chief Exec of the Welsh Sports Association, Mark Laurie, Chief Exec of Street Games, and Dean Pimble, Campaign Manager at Show Racism the Red Card. Also joining us today is Brian Davis, the Director of Sport at Sport Wales. Brian is really kindly standing in for Sarah Powell, who's unfortunately unable to join us due to family illness. And Brian's going to be acting as the keynote listener today and will be responding to the panel debate at the end. So following the panel debate and Brian's response, we'll have loads of time for questions to our panel from everybody here today. So please do get thinking and submit your questions. We try for about 11:30. Let's see how we go, because we want to make sure we get around as many of your questions as possible. You can do that through the Q&A function at the bottom of your Zoom screen, or you can do it via the chat box where our moderator, Andy, will pick them up. So first of all, we're going to hear from our panelists. Mark, I'm going to come to you first, please. If I could ask the panel to put their videos on so we can see you, that would be great. Thank you. Brilliant. Welcome, everybody. I suppose the obvious place to start really is just tell us a little bit about how community sports have been impacted by COVID-19, because I know that there are lots of people on the call today from particular sports associations, and I'm going to try and get loads of questions out of them as well later on. But there are lots of people today who aren't involved with community sports provision at all. So let's start from the basics, and particularly with regards to inequalities and making sure that everybody has access to sports and exercise, so, and opportunities for exercise. So could you talk us through how you've seen things from your perspective, please?
Thanks very much, Ariel. Good morning, everyone. It's always nice to be in Wales, even if it's only just virtually. I had an interesting conversation with my chair a couple of weeks ago where he said to me, we don't seem to have been talking very much about sport in the past year. And I went away and reflected, because obviously Street Games is a sports charity that's based in the most disadvantaged areas and works with around 250 organisations that provide community sport in Wales. And I realised that people just haven't been playing. With lockdown, we've talked about sport and how important it is, but actually the organisations that we support who provide community sport in the heart of neighbourhoods that are heavily impacted by poverty have had to do so many different things in the past 12 months. They've been focused on not on providing their weekly sport and physical activity, but on providing food for local people. They've been there to provide support for local people with things like universal credit. But what that's meant for the children and young people who play there is that in the survey and the consultation we've done with young people, nearly 70% of the young people we spoke to were doing a lot less sport and physical activity. They were not engaging. They were not able, obviously, to get together in groups with their friends. And 81% of those who normally play community sport told us that was the first and biggest thing they were missing from not being able to play. And even though at different stages through all the various lockdowns and roadmaps and changes, there've been times when they might have been able to come together in small groups, or they might have been able for a short period last summer to get involved in playing sport a bit more regularly, the impact has been really significant. And I suppose what's important to consider from an inequalities perspective is that for these young people, their experience of lockdown has not been like the majority of ours. Many of them have been living in overcrowded housing. Many of them have been in a position where they don't have any sports kit. I was really struck by one of our young volunteers did a piece about what it's been like for young people who normally play community sport in lockdown. And there was a young boy who said, "I've got two footballs, but they're both burst. And we can't afford to replace them." So those experiences that many of us have probably had through lockdown, have been able to go to the park and play with family, play with other children, will not have been happening in many of the areas affected by poverty in Wales. There will have been young people who have been through trauma, really, and sport will be a positive release, but it hasn't been there for many days over the past 12 months.
So a really sobering start for us all. Victoria, can you tell me a little bit from your perspective at the Welsh Sports Association, the kinds of conversations that you've been having with your members about this?
Sure. I mean, everybody knows that COVID has shone a spotlight on inequalities across society, and sport is certainly no exception to that. Through lockdown, I mean, just talking about my own personal experiences, the first thing I did was start going in the garage and looking through to see what stuff I've got there to keep the children entertained, and not everybody's got that privilege. So what we've done is start to look deeper at what we can do to change that going forward, because what we want is a level playing field for all children in Wales to be able to be active and to do the sports that they choose to do. And it's a conversation that is now ongoing with my colleagues across all of the governing bodies and our members in Wales also.
Thanks. Dean, obviously, you know, there's been a massive focus, hasn't there, on people playing games in a different way and thinking about different skills through web-based stuff. But if you haven't got access to the net, or you've only got one device at home, That's a real problem, isn't it? So real exacerbation from the kinds of, you know, there's the physical aspect of things, but there's also the sort of loneliness and mental health aspect of things. Are those the sorts of things that have been coming up through the work that Show Racism the Red Card has been involved with?
Yeah, certainly. And I'm sure everyone realises that COVID's had the biggest effect on the people from a Black, Asian and minority ethnic community around their health. But yeah, certainly, you know, not having access to internet or tablets to even participate in some of the online exercise which has been available has been really troubling for some of our communities.
So what sort of activities have you been able to do over the last year?
So at Show Racism the Red Card, we do education and provide education for young people, but communities we work with and from people from the BAME community, it's a lot of stuff where they can go out running, walking with families and stuff which doesn't use a huge amount of equipment or there's no cost associated, and they can do that within their local communities.
Okay. So Mark, just going back to your thing, you know, one of the interesting things I read over the last, I can't remember what it was, but you're seeing more girls doing stuff because they're engaging with more stuff, whether it's on videos or apps or whatever at home in that kind of safe space. So you're seeing, and I wasn't expecting to see that, a sort of an increase in girls doing more sport and exercise, and a decrease in boys doing stuff, because the stereotype, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, the stereotype is of the boys playing football out in the park, and that not being possible. I know there's lots of different sports available, and there's lots of different sports represented in the audience today. So I'm interested to hear from you all, and I'll pull out some organisations in a bit. But can you tell us a little bit about the sort of gender aspects of what you're seeing, and if there have been any? I mean, I think you made a really, really important point about the kinds of practical support that community sports organisations have had to turn their hands to out of necessity over the course of the last year. But maybe there are also some really creative potential solutions coming out of this, and some things that have been accelerated in a positive way as well as in a negative way.
Yes, absolutely, and I wouldn't want for 1 minute to paint this as a picture of doom across the board. So with girls and young women, what's really interesting is that in some respects, as you just alluded to, some of the barriers to sport that girls and young women face have come down as a result of COVID. So one of the things that our Us Girls programme that we deliver across Wales talks about is the issue around the male gaze, and some of those issues for young women and girls around being in places where they're participating, being watched by boys, and concerned about the way they look, the way they feel, and so actually being able to get involved in lifestyle exercise at home via an online means has taken that barrier away. What we also know from a lot of the work we've done, and you've alluded to it again, is that there are more boys interested in team sports than girls. So actually the removal of team sports has led to a reduction in participation, certainly in the settings that we're involved in, because those team sports haven't been possible. And our experience is that lifestyle sports, fitness, yoga, those kinds of things have been really popular. But what was one of the great things I think we did in Wales was we did a rugby fit online programme. One of our programme projects in the north of Wales developed a rugby fit session at 3 o'clock on a Tuesday, I think it was. And there were lots then of young women from across not just Wales, but England as well. Some of our staff did it. So it was a great way to engage. I think what we did notice over time is that there was quite a lot of fatigue in that, not just the physical type, but actually after a while, people got a bit bored of being online exercising, and the drop off has been quite significant. But certainly, as you say, for many young women and girls, some of those barriers to exercise have been brought down by being able to do it in the safety, security of their own home, in a way that they want, in kit that they want, without having to have their video on, even if they want to, so they can exercise without being visible.
I'm gonna pick you up on the girls aren't interested in team sports angle. I think that's to do with structural issues rather than girls not being interested in team sports. So let's come back to that, Victoria, with you, please. But Dean, from the point of view of women from minority ethnic backgrounds being involved in sport, are you seeing the same sort of thing that Mark is talking about? Are you hearing about that kind of stuff in your networks?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think Mark's spot on with a lot of girls don't, and a lot of religions as well, where, you know, actually taking part in physical activity and boys watching them is a big no-no. So it's really important that, you know, the girls have got a safe space where they can participate in sport safely, you know, and where they're comfortable. I think that's really important, that these young people are comfortable and to participate in sport as well.
Yeah. Victoria, let's come back to this sort of team sports angle. I mean, I think interestingly, one of the things I was involved with, I think about 15 years ago in Wales, my first role in Wales, was looking at gender budgeting and the impact of what was being spent on sports. I think it might have been with Sport Wales at the time, actually, Brian. Was the impact of what money was spent and what the impact on different genders was. So floodlighting and things like that for outdoor sports tended to be heavily focused on boys, whereas the things that enabled women in particular from more deprived backgrounds to access sport, things like childcare and spaces for people to look after their children, which would enable them to get to a fitness class, et cetera, wasn't available at the time. So there it's more complicated than I think it's more complicated than sometimes it can seem at first sight. But I know you've got lots of members in the audience today. Can we pick up on the issues of drop off really, and what you're hearing through your networks about whether young people aren't rejoining sports clubs, or where things are at in terms of that starting to open up?
Well, just on your first point in terms of girls not being interested in team sports, I'm not sure that's really true. And I'm sure there are many colleagues of mine in the audience that wouldn't agree with that. If you look at the explosion in the number of girls playing football, for instance, over the last few years, you know, it's the fastest growing sport for women on the planet. So I probably challenge that a little bit. And you're right, things like, you know, sort of if you're looking at the typical footballs and rugbys previously, that may have been the case, that it's more boys, but there's a cultural shift happening. So the floodlights that are going in, the astroturfs that are going in, the way that football, rugby and hockey, for instance, are teaming up to work together to have the right facilities available for all these sports, are all helping us make great strides in that area. In terms of drop off, I think, you know, what we hear from many of our members is this training fatigue, as was just talked about now, you know, sort of not being able to have that kind of physical contact in team sports is a real challenge. Not being able to be close enough to be in the gymnastic centre to make sessions viable are all big challenges that I think we will be facing for the next few years to come.
And obviously people are experiencing things from very different perspectives. I know we've got people from disability sport as well in today's audience. One of the things that struck me from an event that we had, I think last September, October, was and I hope I get this right, I think there'd been one swimming pool that had been open in Ceredigion throughout the whole of the bit that things were actually opened up and it was possible to swim. And for those people for whom swimming is an absolute lifeline for physical and mental health reasons and accessibility reasons, then that's a real issue. Let's move on and think about how we widen access. So, you know, obviously there's a lot of talk about whether it's building back better, building back fairer, building back for the future, whatever term you use after the pandemic, and we're obviously not out of it yet. And there's obviously no reason why the sports sector can't do that too and shouldn't do that too. In fact, it absolutely must, because one thing that's absolutely come through loud and clear over the last year is how much physical and mental well-being are intertwined. So we talked a little bit about how existing inequalities have been exacerbated, as well as new ones created as a result of the pandemic. How do we, Victoria, I'm going to come to you first, how do we help the sector to go much, much, much further than it has before, opening up access and bringing a much wider group of people to playing sport? What kind of things are being discussed amongst your members? And can you, and I'm going to ask people in the room too, to share practical examples that they've got as well, please.
I think building back fairer is certainly the sort of the strategic aim that we hold at the Welsh Sports Association. You know, there are some amazing programmes around to be able to give children the opportunity to try new sports. You know, the amazing work that Street Games do around the Fit and Fed programmes. But sometimes it might be about an individual's choice. So, you know, just the kind of the taster sessions might not be enough. We've got some amazing charities that do this work. We've got the likes of the Sports Aid, GLL Foundation, that will help aspiring athletes. But you can't become aspiring athlete if you can't get on to these sports in the first place. For us, we are looking to find solutions to support individuals, because when you look at the plethora of support and investment that is made, it really is wonderful. But there's not a huge amount out there that will just specifically look at individuals on a means-tested basis. There may be some complexities attached to that, but they're challenges that we are absolutely up for. So that if you are a young girl and your passion is gymnastics, but really you can't afford to join the gymnastics club, which is just half a mile down the road, then we're looking at ways in which we might be able to support that child sort of throughout her period of activity through a gymnastics club, as a for instance.
Okay, because I think, you know, one of the things obviously that's come out from this last year is very much about how you know, mutual aid organisations have bonded communities, local communities, very local, hyper-local communities together in a very, very different way. And it'll be interesting to see whether that sort of, if that support is maintained and sort of awareness. And I mean, that's more about sort of kit and tools and things like that, things that people need to do a sort of a school project, for instance. Do you have any XYZ, when it was difficult to get hold of things in the shops, for instance? And the same thing for kit, but not so much from the point of view of that sort of ongoing subscriptions perspective. Mark, I'm going to come to you with, you know, there are lots of conversations in the media around, and I think though I read something about yesterday, England talking about, you know, reimagining the school day potentially from sort of 8 o'clock till 6 o'clock, with cultural enrichment programs of music and drama and sports, all there. Could that remove barriers for children from poorer backgrounds who are less likely to come back into school after going home, for instance, and school playing that community hub role in a very different way, sort of on beyond, with those associated benefits of being involved in activity and exercise? Issues with transport as well, you know, because public transport is an issue for many for many people who can't get to stuff. And, you know, that gets you into a whole conversation around access to cars, climate change, and all those sort, you know, huge bundles of things that are very intertwined here. Could you just tell me a little bit about your thinking on that? And if there's conversations that you're involved with, I know you work across certainly England and Wales. Do you work in Scotland too, Street Games?
We do. Not at the same sort of scale, but we do work in Scotland as well. I mean, I think you just alluded to it. I think just for answer your question, I just wanted to share that what I said previously was that the data shows that more boys play team sports than girls. I'm a father of two teenage daughters.
Okay, who are both, thank you for that clarification.
Strong feminists, and would kill me if they thought I was standing on a platform saying that girls don't play team sports. So that isn't the case.
I think what you said was girls weren't interested in team sports, and that's what you were rightly pulled up on. But totally take your point, and I'm glad your daughters are staunch feminists. So well done.
Yes, they are. So yes, and I'm an advocate as well. I think to your point, I do think this is incredibly complex. I think one of the issues around particularly children, families in poverty, is that it's not just about money. It's not just about things being free. What we know is that for things like wraparound childcare between 8 and 6, they have to feel like the activities that children and young people would choose. So it's not enough to just open schools up both ends of the school day, because actually for older teenagers, they don't want to stay on school site, most of them. They'd rather go down the road to the youth club and play their sport there. So I used to work on the extended services program in England a good few years ago, and I'm a big advocate of having space extracurricular, particularly for disadvantaged children, because all the data shows that they don't get to engage in extracurricular activity as much as those who are more affluent. But that isn't just about money. Sometimes it's about having the right kit. Sometimes it's about the nature of what's provided. So competitive team sports for some children are not what they want. They want more of a fun run around opportunity. And the way that everywhere in the UK has designed things like PE and sport over many years is to gear it towards competition, which immediately disinterests both my daughters. Neither of them are competitive, but they're both incredibly sporty. So we really need to think about what the offer looks like. I think another couple of points, and it's linked to what Vicky was saying, actually. This is a transformational moment. This is a moment where the world is looking at poverty because of people like Marcus Rashford, and understanding that in the UK, a third of the children in the UK live in poverty. One in six families in the UK live in poverty. This is a huge number of children and families. And so actually, everyone needs to be thinking about what needs to change, whether that be facility access, and we look at who uses sports facilities, how do we make them more inclusive as we build back better or reopen and recover and reinvent, whether that's about people really understanding why it is that children from these backgrounds don't access their sport. because the first myth to bust, it's not that they don't like sport. We know that's not true, because when you put the right sport on, they turn up. Be they girls, boys, they turn up when the right sporting offer is there. And all those issues.
Just thinking, I think, you know, my perception, and again, I may be wrong, but my perception is often individual sports associations ask their communities where they want to work, whether their thing is the thing that they want. What sort of cross-sector and cross-sports collaboration is there in asking communities, well, what do you want? Where should we be working? Because maybe there's a, and this is equally the case for lots of people in the audience today. You know, because one thing that's coming through loud and clear, not just from this conversation, but from others that we've had over the last year, is that working with the same partners just isn't going to cut it anymore. People have got to find really creative ways of, you know, it's the wrong analogy to use, killing two birds with one stone, but different ways of maximizing the impact that money can have, time, resources, trusted adults that play that extra parental role, all sorts of things that help play that preventative role and help decrease people's stress, increase their physical and mental well-being.
Yeah, and consultation, these communities and these families are consulted to death, because they are the ones that live in poverty. Every service from every angle wants to know what they think. And the truth is they don't have time to answer the question about what any single sport needs to do to access them. So your point about locally trusted individuals, that's the crucial one. Where do these children go that they feel safe, that they want to engage with, even if they are living in a situation where it's a very traumatic home life that they've got? And then how does sport shape and bend its offer to provide within those places that they're comfortable? So what we know from all the work we've done is that a multi-sport approach is the thing that most children and young people in those areas enjoy, because some of them will want to join clubs and play team sports, but a lot of them just want to try different things, because the most important thing for them is playing with their friends. They're more concerned about social time outside their house than they are about whether it's hockey or netball or football or rugby. It's about actually creating the safe environment that you can bring the right shape of sport into, and also giving them a say in what that looks like. So not telling them that it has to be six aside, it can be three aside. Those sorts of things are the bits that make a difference.
That's really interesting. I think that thing about wanting to do stuff with your friends is so true, because you know, like lots of people here, I've got kids too, and one's competitive, one isn't, and the other one is very competitive, but they're interested in trying new things now because they haven't been doing so much for such a long time, and in a way that I wouldn't have necessarily anticipated as well. I know we've got a number, about four local authorities on the call today across Wales, and I'm going to put a question to Vicky, and then Dean, I'm going to come to you with this as well. And it's also for local authorities on the call, because I think it's a big issue in terms of financing and resources, obviously, where local authorities are going to be very stretched, and leisure centres are often one of the first points of call and hubs for these sorts of things, where there aren't lots of resources in a particular, that are located in a particular location. So one of the potential post-COVID issues is that leisure centres and sports clubs will be under pressure to make money as well. As spend what they have, and that could lead to programs helping deprived children being cut from budgets, or general prices for clubs and leisure centers rising, making it even more unaffordable for people from poorer backgrounds. Vicky, can you talk us through what sort of conversations there, because you know it's going to be very challenging, isn't it, fiscally? It's going to be very, very challenging for local authorities. You've got issues around you know, post-EU structural funds not coming to local authorities to provide some of the other support that might free up resources to pay for these sorts of things. Local authorities also having to bid in to levelling up funds across the UK at pretty short notice. Is that a fair assessment of where things are?
I think it is going to continue to be a challenge for some time to come. And yes, they do need to be able to balance the books. And every sector is going to be fighting for their piece of the pie in terms of local authority budgets as well. What's incredibly helpful in Wales is that at least half our local authorities run a trust model. So their facilities are managed by charitable trusts. So, of course, their job is to make sure that they balance the book, but it's not about profit. It's about reinvesting back into their communities. And those models work particularly well. And we need to continue to make sure that we're engaged with the local clubs that use them to ensure that finance or the fees are not a barrier. Some of the other challenges around this, certainly sort of in the periods where we've been allowed to be open, is things like the gyms are the places that will make the most money. So sometimes people are having to put their gyms, because they're fairly small spaces, into sports halls, which then knocks out space for your netballs or your badmintons. And that's a challenge. And still the same with the vaccination centres. Some leisure centres are continuing to be used for those as well. So I think sort of as well as money, it's actually just, you know, access to those spaces is going to be a challenge.
Yeah, that's it. So I guess one of the reflections I would make on that is that it isn't suddenly as though the pandemic is over and, oh, here, this is what we're doing from now on. We're still going to be through a process of change. Your point about lots of leisure centres being taken over by vaccination programmes is very well made, I think. And I think that change is going to continue over time. The other change, obviously, Dean, that we've seen over the last year is a totally different conversation about race, for very obvious reasons, following the murder of George Floyd that we are marking this week. There is lots more to do to create far more inclusive environments, ensuring that sport is inclusive, not only for women, for people from disabled backgrounds, but also for minority ethnic groups. I know that you've been involved in conversations about training for coaches on discussions about race and how you do that, because lots of people are really worried, scared, don't know where to start. Can you share some of that as well, please?
Yeah, certainly. I think education is key. Unless you want to learn and want to get there, you're never actually going to get there. So some of the work we want to do with coaches is certainly just provide them with even terminology, making sure that everything is more included. And there's a sense of belonging, because children want to belong and feel like they want to be, and adults as well. If you turn up and you're the only person from a Black, Asian or minority ethnic community, and you're looking around, there's nobody that looks like you, that's straight away a barrier for you taking part in that sport. So we want to educate the coaches across the board, across all sports, of just what is racism, what are microaggressions, terminology, what terminology should be using, and how to include these youngsters and people from the BAME community in our sessions to make them feel like they belong there, and hopefully participate in sport then for lifelong. I think that's really important.
Because getting them young means that they'll stay with you. Brian, I'm going to come to you now. Thanks, everybody, for a bit of reflection back. But before I do, I know we've got a bunch of questions already on the chat sheet. I just wanted to sort of read out some of the organisations who are with us today. We've got the National Lottery Community Fund, Welsh Rowing, local authorities from Ceredigion and Cardiff and Bangor, so a good spread there, thank you. Community organisations, Football Association of Wales, Valleys Gymnastics Academy, a number of churches with us too, the Welsh Rugby Union, Welsh Athletics, Cricket Wales, Squash Wales, Cardiff City Foundation, the Kickboxing Association, Welsh Gymnastics, universities from right across the country, a number of foundations and charities, Disability Sport Wales, Swim Wales, somebody from the Senate as well, looking at what MSs might be doing to hold Welsh Government to account on their intentions, Basketball Wales, Welsh Triathlon and Citizens Wales. So I'm sure you've got lots of questions, so keep them coming, please. Brian, I hope now you could give us maybe 4 or 5 reflections on what you've heard from the conversation today, what you'll be taking back to discussions with Sarah and for the Minister too.
Ie, diolch Eiriol, bore da pawb. Pleser fod yma yn cynrychioli Chwaraeon Cymru. Ymddiheuriadau oddi wrth Sarah, wrth gwrs, mater anochel. Morning everybody, apologies once again from Sarah. Fascinating conversation. I've got to admit, the title of the session is exactly what I want to focus on, really, which is the word rethinking. because what we've had is a change agent forced on us, really. It's an opportunity rather than a problem, and we need to take advantage of it. The rethinking, though, has been a challenge in the short term because people have been busy dealing with the immediate. But we need to move on now, and the opportunity is there to rethink what can be done and how we can all work together. It's not one organisation or one person, even in the minister or the first minister's responsibility, is all our responsibilities. The couple of points that really took my attention was Mark's statistical analysis at times seemed to vary with some of the statistics we found through our ComRes survey, from what I could gather. But I don't think that should be a surprise, because our surveys tend to be focused on the people we already work with. And the reality here is, if we're going to rethink what we do, we need to widen and broaden that network and who we as an organisation, i.e. Sport Wales, consult with, invest in, discuss with, etc. And so maybe it's not a surprise that some of the stats seem to be at odds. Some of them are obviously in parallel. The gender gap closing, but for all the wrong reasons, because not for the positive reasons. So that was interesting. On the rethinking piece and the opportunity, we initially were probably quite rightly focusing on protect and prepare, investing in organisations to help them through the pandemic. We now need to change and put an emphasis on the progress element of our schemes and how we work, but we also need to be listening, so we design those schemes so that they can help and not introduce barriers. You know, when we talk about intersectional inequality, some of the race issues, it's clear that what the way we operate as an organization is not helping. We have criteria and people don't respond to criteria, but they respond to ideas and suggestions, and maybe we need to be a little more risky as an organization with public money. And I don't mean that in terms of fraud. I mean that in terms of investing in something that might not work, but it's worth having a go because it could make a huge difference to certain communities or elements of our community. So we're definitely trying to listen. We need to broaden our network. A couple more points, Oriol, if I may. One is, we've got a new government. The manifesto of the successful party, if you read it, gives us plenty of hooks to do some of the stuff I've just mentioned and some of the things that the panelists have mentioned. The programme, we need to advocate for that programme of government that will come out of that manifesto so that it does suit everything people were talking about. But it won't be easy. Vicky touched on, you know, how challenging the economic model is going to be for everybody, including trusts, local authorities, health boards, etc. It won't be any different for us as an organisation either. But we've got a new minister who will be keen to make sure we try and address some of those hooks that I mentioned that are in the manifesto that we can work with. I think probably that's it for now. I was reading the comments, the questions in the chat box, really interesting. You know, we won't shy away from the challenge, but we won't get everything right either. So if people think Sport Wales is the answer on its own, they're mistaken. Sport Wales is just a part of this jigsaw, and everyone on this call, and it's heartening to see the numbers on the call, need to play a part together, collaborate and try and address some of these inequalities and do some rethinking.
Thanks, Brian. So I'm going to go to some of those questions now. We've got 20 minutes or so. There's a question here from Rajma Begum, which is, swimming is a really popular activity, especially for ethnic diverse communities. I talked about this a little bit earlier. And there are concerns about the future of swimming pools, what support and who can provide that? What support can be offered to ensure that pools remain open for local communities? Vicky, can I come to you with that one, please?
We find that's one a little bit for Brian, but on that point of helping communities to ensure that facilities stay open, it isn't just local authorities, it isn't just Sport Wales. What we're really not very good at in Wales is seeing sport as a cause. So across the UK, there is £1 billion a year that is raised for good causes, charities, through sports events. So every time you do a Race for Life, the London Marathon, the likes of that, the money is raised for fabulous causes, but generally sport doesn't see itself as a cause. Keeping the local swimming pool open is an incredibly valuable cause. You know, we've heard anecdotally of people coming back in to pools that are now on walking sticks because they haven't been able to exercise in a swimming pool for a long time. So to look into educate communities in how to generate income, working using technology to contact, you know, our diaspora across the world and developing a fundraising model that we can invest in these things are needed. We need to make sure that people have the tools for the job to help themselves and to help their own communities. And that needs for me to be a big part of the solution and the rethink that goes on around sport as we come out of the pandemic.
So a big call for working together for a start and for reframing this conversation. Dean, one of the things that we've seen in sort of a slightly different area around participation in public life for people from different backgrounds, whether it's from disabilities, from women, people who are underrepresented in public life, has been how groups have started working together. So in Wales, the Ethnic Youth Minority Support Team, Disability Wales and the Women's Equality Network have put together a really great campaign called 50-50 about representation, so just working together and intersectionally. So there's a question here from Heather Lewis, which is how do we ensure that disability and all ability sport is treated equally fairly in terms of resourcing, visibility and so forth? And I wondered whether you've got any experience of working with other, whether it's with Disability Sport Wales or with other groups that are addressing a particular issue or particular concerns from particular parts of the community that aren't necessarily, may also be, but aren't necessarily from minority ethnic groups, to show that kind of that collaboration also happening in your field.
So at the moment, Showace and Red Card, our key kind of messages, anti-racism education, go out to schools, community groups, working with people like that. In my previous role at Cardiff City, we certainly worked with lots of different groups for working with, you know, Disability Sport Wales, and working with people like the FAW Trust, working with different organisations to come together to ensure that everything is inclusive. I think that's really important, that all sport is inclusive. So whether that be your football on the weekend, you know, can we have people from all different backgrounds taking part? Can we have people who've got impairments taking part in that session as well? So it's not there is a disability session for these young people. It's not a session for people from a minority ethnic community here. It's making sure that it's an inclusive approach so that these sports and activities are available for everybody to take part, and everybody that feels valued and feels part of that session as well. I think it's really important.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Mark, there's a question here from Andrew Brenton, which is, do the panel think there's enough provision for equality in adult sports, both in terms of socioeconomic and disability equality? What more could be done for adult sport?
That's a big question. I suppose one of the things that we would take from the family project that we've been running, our family engagement project funded by the Healthy and Active Fund in Wales, is that sometimes the barriers for adults to engage in sport can be really simple and don't require all system design. So I'll just give an example of a young mum who was involved in one of our schemes where she's got three children and she wanted all of them under six to go and get involved in sport, but actually didn't have, because of her circumstances, a double buggy. So we spent £150 through that project to buy that lady a double buggy, and she can now go and access the yoga session in her local community centre. Now that's just an anecdotal example, but sometimes this isn't structural. Sometimes this is about really understanding what are the genuine day-to-day barriers that face adults. And a lot of the adults we talk to, if you look at over 60% of families in poverty have working adults in their family now. And those working adults are having to work on average an extra 7 hours a week just to stand still. So redesigning sport with that in mind, when is the best time to be running sessions, not when's the most convenient that's always been there for the coach on a Tuesday night, but actually, when does a time poor adult get the opportunity to play, and when are we running sessions? Your point earlier about how do we ensure that there's appropriate childcare? Because one of the barriers for that mum, she didn't even want to go to the park because she's got two hands and three children under six. There's no way she's going to go and be active in the park because she can't physically take them out of the house. So it's very much rethinking, to Brian's point and to the title of the session, what are the barriers for adults to get involved in activity, and what can we do to rethink how we offer sport to remove some of those challenges and barriers?
And I think some of that is there's a very valid concern about over surveying or over consulting, and sometimes it's about making it simple. You don't need an outcomes framework for that, do you? You need somebody involved in planning it who's part of the community and who can bring people with them. That in every community there are movers and shakers who everybody knows, because everybody knows that they're the ones who make things happen, or they're the ones who pick up the pieces after something goes wrong. I think the point that you just made around questioning everything is a really good one for all of us to hold on to. Just because it's been how it's always been doesn't mean it needs to continue to be like that. Thank you. I'm going to move on to a comment. It's more than a comment. It's a comment more than a question, but I think it's really useful, from Peter Bradbury, who's Cabinet Member for Culture and Leisure in Cardiff. Peter thinks that the question that's asked today is the wrong one. So it's really tricky asking framing questions for things, but that's fine. It should be, what are governing bodies doing in order to address financial inequality in sport? And his opinion is not a lot. So his comment is that here in Cardiff, why are our national teams packed in with internationals from the north of our city? And yet with all the talent in communities like the one that he represents in Cairo, we've seen very few people break into elite clubs or sport. It's not a lack of talent. It's an unconscious bias based on financial resources. And as Cabinet Member in Cardiff, it's something he's not happy with, and not happy with the response from governing bodies such as FAW, Sport Wales, WRU, Athletics Wales, and so forth. Brian, I think I'm going to come to you with this one. So a robust challenge from Peter.
I expect nothing less from Peter. We have some good, robust conversations most of the time. So it's great. You know, we need to challenge each other. We need to be optimistic as well, though, and look for solutions rather than just point the finger at one particular organisation, say the FAW. Just heard Dean give examples of how the FAW Trust are trying to work to make things better. And everyone can do more to make things better, and I include Sport Wales in that. I'd also like to include Cardiff Council in that, and I'm sure they will, and I'm sure they do some really good work. So it is about collaborating, conversing, challenging, and coming up with new ideas. So I welcome Peter's challenge, but I'd also ask, what is Cardiff Council doing as well then? And how can we help Cardiff Council? How can we all help each other? Because he's right, there is talent everywhere. But some of the questions, the fundamental ones, is for people to be able to demonstrate their talent, they need to be able to have an opportunity in the first place. And I guess we're starting most of the conversation today on that piece. How do we give people the opportunity? What are the barriers, and what can we all do? And yeah, I welcome the challenge. I think it's a good challenge, but I don't think we should just accuse an organisation of not doing something. I think we're all on the call here because we all want to do something, and the FAW are on the call. So that's really positive. So let's, you know, attempt to find solutions to these kind of issues that Peter quite rightly points out.
Okay. To be fair to Peter, he also talked about WRU and Athletics Wales as well in his question, so not just FAW. Peter, ball's in your court for a bit of a response, some practical examples, please, from Cardiff Council. I'm going to move on to a question from David Collins, and that kind of, it's a nice segue actually from what you were just saying, Brian. You know, there's a lot of things about you can't be it if you can't see it, and while David thinks that the focus is rightly on participation, some of that absolutely does come from inspiration by spectating. You know, you need role models to look up from, and those from less wealthy households will have less access to online sports broadcasts and elite sport as well. And grassroots spectator sport has been closed for over a year now and is being neglected in the roadmap post-pandemic because all focus is on elite events. And I wonder, and this comes back to Victoria, I'm going to come to you for this first. What are the Welsh Sports Association doing to address this particular point, please?
I wouldn't agree with the fact that it's just the elite sport that's being focused on. Certainly, we've worked with government and Sport Wales tirelessly throughout the pandemic to ensure that we can get community sport back up and running so that we can allow spectators in as well. So, you know, we've got to the point where we've had, you know, we don't have limits in terms of young children for outdoor activity now in particular. If parents need to be there because it's a safeguarding matter, they're allowed to be there. So we've continued to lobby government. Our approach has been to work with government. I think some organisations have used the strategy of bashing them over the head. We've not taken that approach, but certainly when there have been constructive challenges to be mounted, we've been making them. But absolutely our priority is to get people back out and active and to get people to be able to spectate again as well. And these are things that are within the government's thinking at the moment. And we're hopeful for some announcements on that fairly soon.
Thanks. Having said that, I'm now going to go to the sort of elite end of the sports side of things. So there's a question here from Jamie Berry, which is, with breakdance now being in the Olympics, is there a chance to have breaking more involved and included? And as we seem to reach a lot of these young people that that we're talking about. Dean, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's not just talking to the communities of what they want, but also listening. I think that's a big problem. Certainly when we talk about the issue of race and racism, is there's loads of people doing consultation, but nobody actually listening to the what the people are actually saying. So unless we're listening, it's going to stop people actually having input into consultation in the future. So, you know, I think we should open it to as many sports as possible, and also providing opportunities for all communities to try something new. I think that's the problem in, you know, with the school sports survey. It talks about what sports you want to take part in, but some of the communities won't even know what golf looks like or what it's like. So how would they know that they want to take part in it? So it's providing those opportunities on their doorstep as well, of trying these sports and activities. And if it's, you know, if we can get one or two people, you know, it's a success, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. You don't know what you don't like or what you do like until you try it, do you? And sometimes you have to try something a few times to figure it out. And then sometimes something just clicks. And it's like, oh yeah, absolutely, totally. Why didn't I never know about this before? There is a response from Peter to the challenge, Brian, which is Cardiff Council making sure under 16s pitches are free to book, building 3Gs in 21st century schools to allow facilities to be made available in the community. And they've financially supported leisure centres during the pandemic, and they're largely in the southern arc of the city, which are include the more deprived areas. One last question from our own Harry Thompson, which is to you, back to you, please, Dean. How do sports like rugby become much more inclusive environments for people from minority ethnic backgrounds? So in Cardiff, you know, rugby is often seen to have a much greater hold in predominantly white areas, and far less in multicultural areas like Bute Town.
Yeah, I think it's finding coaches from those communities, and again, getting the sport on their doorstep. So is there grants or recruitment drive to get more coaches from a Black, Asian and minority ethnic community to actually coach the sport, and coaches from those communities where the young people predominantly live, is really important. That, you know, we've got those positive role models for them who are actively driving the sport in those areas. And like we talked about earlier, is can't be what you can't see. If you're seeing a coach from a BAME community, you're more likely to go and take part in that sport. And I think that's really important that we've got these coaches, and that's across not just rugby. I know it's an issue across all sports of coaches from the minority ethnic community. The FAW in England are doing something which is really positive. In an elite sport, 25% of the coaches that applying for jobs have to be from a minority ethnic community. It'd be good to see, you know, the FAW and follow something the same.
Okay. I know we had Ali Abdi from Citizens Wales signed up. Ali is a fantastic mover and shaker in Grangetown and Bute Town. And I wonder if I can ask if he's here to get in touch and let us know what's going on, and we can share that with people afterwards. I'm going to try and squeeze in one last question. Brian, this one's for you, please. It's from Elizabeth Lewis, which is, what did the panel think the role of higher education could and should be to help the Building Back Fairer agenda for sport as another piece of that jigsaw in collaborative working? I know we've got a lot of universities in particular on the call today.
Yeah, it's an excellent question. I think it's also further education, not just higher education, especially when we're talking about intersectional challenges and inequalities, because the further education piece is broader and right in some of those communities that we want to make a difference with, but higher education too. I think if we were going to hold our hand up, and we ought to, we'd say it's probably been an area we haven't done a lot of work with in these kind of participation areas. It's mainly been a high-end performance that we've involved higher education. So there's a challenge there for us, but one we're willing to take on. But I would say it's higher education and further education, not just higher education. Just coming back on a couple of points, not too far gone, but when we talked about what you can't be, what you can't see, what did seem to come out was this multi-sport offer. Mm. And we do talk a lot about governing bodies and singular sports. I think pre-pandemic, the governing bodies were starting to collaborate much better in offering a multi-sport package to communities and early participants, and I think that needs to continue and accelerate rather than just offering a particular sport. It helps sweat the asset in terms of facilities as well, so that you're getting a lot more out of those assets. So I think we need to think back to what we were doing as governing bodies in terms of collaboration and the wider partner network and accelerate now forward. So
okay, thanks, Brian. So we've got a minute to go. I'm just going to wrap up very, very quickly, pulling together a couple of themes of what I've that's particularly struck me. One is it's all our responsibility, and that's come through for all of these things. There's no such thing as my job is this and my life is over here. It's all of our responsibility. If you care about inequalities and you care about making sure people have access to sporting facilities and physical activity in any shape or form, then you have a role to play. The question is, have you found it yet? And that's a question for us all. There was a big thing about organisations working with people they already work with, and who don't they know, and who aren't they reaching, and do they even know where they are and who they are? An interesting challenge from Brian, thinking about the progress element of the scheme that Sport Wales supports, and looking at how organisations work. Maybe it's about being more creative with public money, Brian, rather than more risky. There's less of it around, but it's about being more creative with that. A strong call from Vicky for sport to be seen as a cause, and a really strong call also from Dean that there should be much, 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 much more listening to people rather than asking questions about things. And that came through also from what Mark was saying, particularly in terms of trying things out, trying things in a different way from before. So I guess my challenge to all the associations and clubs and organisations on the call today is about, who are you working with already? Who aren't you working with? Who are working in different areas, but often with the same people? People don't experience their issues and their lives in silos, depending on where the funding is coming from. These things are all mixed up together in a lovely, complicated bundle of things. And if I were Andy, I would have a synthesizer metaphor to go with that, but I'm not. I would like to really thank our panelists and Brian as kind of receiver and official listener for giving us their time today. So Victoria Ward from the Welsh Sports Association, Mark Laurie from Street Games, Dean Pimble from Show Race and the Red Card. Thank you very much indeed, Brian Davis from Sport Wales. The IWA has been around since 1987, a grand total of 34 years. We were created in part to make the case for a devolved parliament in Wales, and we continue to work towards a stronger and more confident democracy in our nation. A place where people are aware of how decisions are made and can have their voices heard in shaping them. This means working on a more diverse and independent media rooted in Wales. It means working on improving how our government and parliament engage with their counterparts in the other nations of the UK, and at looking at how we can have a successful, clean, green and fair economy, one which enriches Wales's communities rather than extracting wealth. And it means helping people understand the places where they live and having their voices heard in local decisions day in, day out. And I think community sports is a really good example of that. These are all things that we've published reports on over the last couple of years. Support of our members makes that possible. So if you haven't joined yet, why not? We'll be following up with those of you who aren't yet organisational or individual members, offering you the brilliant opportunity. We're extremely reasonable, and there's a link in the chat where you can do just that. Do please otherwise consider donating to the IWA via our website. It helps us make sure that our events are open and accessible to all. There's also a really short survey in the chat. We really do appreciate your feedback in today's discussion to help us ensure we deliver even better events. When we asked for some feedback over the last year about a particular chunk of our events, Rethinking Wales, we found that 80% of people were introduced to either new speakers or new thinking or new ideas as a result. And we think that's a pretty good result. We hope you've enjoyed today. Jochen Vav, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Hope you get to enjoy the sunshine wherever you are. Thank you. Goodbye.